Hello and welcome to another edition of Jaw Law, the love child between law and dentistry. I'm your host, Joe McGregor, and today we're going to be doing something just a little bit different. Our plan for this podcast is to circulate through various legal issues that dentists face, and particularly the business issues. But our volume of experience means we occasionally encounter questions or pick up thoughts or ideas that aren't exactly legal. They're barely legal. And so today is our first barely legal podcast. Today we're going to be talking about a subject that has become mildly, I don't want to say controversial because I don't think anybody's getting mad about it, but it's a topic that gets debated. I see articles about it, people on Dental Town and some of the other forums, Facebook, they talk about real estate brokers, particularly the real estate brokers who are out finding spaces for de novo practices. And as is the lawyerly thing to do, I'm going to throw out a few caveats. One is we have excellent relationships with many real estate brokers. We also have relationships with people who are not real estate brokers and who probably share some of the criticisms that we're going to talk about today. And my purpose is to not pick one side or the other. I think we owe it to the industry to try to remove misinformation and misunderstanding so that a dentist can make their own well-informed decision about what to do. The reason this topic has become an issue for us is that most of the time when clients come to us, they are already represented by a real estate broker. And most of the time, I would say the overwhelming majority of the time, by a real estate broker who focuses at least in healthcare, if not in specifically in dentistry. But ever so often, we'll have a dentist who, for one reason or another, either won't be getting a broker, and we'll talk about reasons why they might not, or they just don't have one yet. They are not at that point. And in these scenarios, a lot of times what will happen is those dentists will say, hey, do I even need a broker? And in order to answer that question, we have to tackle a couple of sub-issues. The first issue is kind of an interesting one for a lawyer, and that's whether or not a lawyer can serve as your broker. Now, in many states, a lawyer is qualified to represent a client as a broker. And there is arguably incentive to do that because, as we will discuss, there might be a better payout for the lawyer to charge as a broker as opposed to just their regular hourly fee or flat rate that they're doing. So the lawyer might get more out of it economically by being a broker. And the law will permit him to be that broker. And typically, the representation guidelines for that apply to brokers apply at least as heavily for lawyers. And when I say that, I mean like the fiduciary duties that lawyers have in representing their clients. Now, when clients ask me, hey, can a lawyer be a broker? Well, obviously, I have to tell them technically yes, but our firm never serves as the broker because we're not equipped to expertly handle every dimension of the lease. And I stress the word expert because that's going to come back a couple times on this podcast. So it's important to understand that there are multiple dimensions to a lease. Now, the dimension that the tenants tend to care about the most is the economic dimension. And these are the things like how much are you paying per square foot, what kind of tenant improvement allowance are you getting, how much free rent are you getting, those things that impact you on a monthly basis. And they really impact your pocketbook. The emphasis that lawyers give to lease are the legal terms. You might have a 50-page lease, and three pages are dealing with the economic term, and the rest is all the legal mumbo-jumbo. And that's what the lawyers deal with. And obviously, as a lawyer, you feel that you are expertly equipped to deal with that dimension of the lease. But in terms of dealing with the economic dimension, you're not as equipped. And even if a lawyer sees, I mean, we might see 200 leases a year, and I might have a really good idea about what a fair market rate is or how much you should be getting per square foot for tenant improvement allowance. But the difference is that if an individual client is asking me for an individual space, is this a good rate? A lawyer is not equipped to accurately ascertain if that is a good rate. We can get ballparks, but we're not dealing with that portion day in and day out. And that's not the only other dimension of the lease. You also have, I think one of the big other dimensions is the construction dimension. And that's where the lease is going to specify what the landlord's going to deliver to you and the rules that your contractor is going to have to follow. What are building standards? And unless an attorney has an engineering or construction background, those might not make perfect sense to them. And so while lawyers may technically be able to serve as brokers, I'm not sure it's in the best interest of the client that an attorney represents as a broker. Instead, that's why we kind of stay in our lane. We just do the law side, and I would like to think that that's probably a good rule for most attorneys. So answering that question to the client, like, yes, we can be a broker, but we're not going to be. The next question, of course, is, well, should I have a broker apart from my lawyer? And that's the one where we see a lot of debate out there. Now, it all starts with how brokers get paid. Before I go any further, I realize that there are multiple ways that brokers get paid. And the numbers I'm going to use are just for demonstration purposes. There are different numbers, different structures, and different marketplaces have different standards for doing this. But in general, a broker gets paid as a percentage of the base rentals of the lease. So what they're going to do is they're going to add up all the base rent. So not including triple net, doesn't include tenant improvement allowance, things like that. So just adding up the value of the base rent of the lease, and they're going to get paid a percentage. So for instance, it's in Texas, it happens to be the case that brokers will get paid roughly 4% of the base rentals. Now, what does that mean? Well, what that means is that the higher your rental rate is, the more your broker gets paid. And immediately, people recognize, hey, wait a minute, isn't that a problem? The worse job my broker does, the more I have to pay for it. And thus, the controversy. But it's this apparent conflict of interest that I want to talk about. First of all, it's there. Like, there's nothing we can do to take that away. I don't know enough about the broker world and what they do and what they talk about at their conferences and symposiums and stuff. I don't know what other models the industry is exploring, but for now, this is what we're dealing with. And it's pretty ubiquitous. I mean, every marketplace that we've dealt in, this is how it's done. And I don't think it's going to change anytime soon, so we have to deal with it as we find it. And the way we find it is that, yes, there is an apparent initial conflict of interest. And I think that most brokers that I've talked to, they acknowledge this. But it brings up two concepts that I think are really important, not just in answering this question, but in also applying to dentistry in general. So the first thing is this economic perspective to professional services. One of the problems with professional services, and this includes real estate brokers, this includes lawyers, it includes doctors, and importantly, it includes dentists. And the question is, do you have a positive perspective to economic transactions for professional services, or do you have a negative perspective? For instance, if you're going to go buy an object, in economics, we talk about this double coincidence of needs. I need something, this product, and you have it. I have money, and you need that. So you have the need for money. I have the need for the product. We're happy because we exchange on terms that we both agree to. And that exists for professional services, but it's slightly skewed because there's an expertise level that factors in. And typically, one party knows a lot more about the transaction than the other. So in the context of dentistry, your patient comes in, they don't really know how to assess whether or not you're giving them great advice. They may think they know, but they don't really know unless they have some type of previous context. And the question is, do you want them to think that you are planning their treatment in a way to fulfill your needs more than their needs? Do you have this negative perspective on professional services, or do they have a negative perspective on professional services? Now, I probably don't have a single client who would ever say that they treatment plan so that they can get more money. They would all insist that the treatment plan tracks the needs of the patient. And I would like to think that that is true for all of my clients and for all the dentists out there. But when we flip this around back to the real estate brokers, there is an apparent conflict of interest. And do we have a positive frame of reference, or do we have a negative frame of reference? Do we think they're going to prescribe us a rental rate that suits their needs better than it suits ours? And to answer that, it brings up the other concept, which is long-term incentives versus short-term incentives. Let's be realistic. In the short term, yes, 100%. It is in the interest of the broker to give you a lease with higher rates because they are going to make more money. And I guarantee you there are brokers out there who will make that short-term incentive decision. Just like there are dentists out there who probably treatment plan with that same short-term incentive in mind. However, if you get a broker with a long-term incentive framework, well, it's not in their interest to get you a crappy rate because, as you know, dentists talk to each other. And if you're the broker who is known in the industry as getting really bad deals, you're not going to last in the industry. So it's not in their long-term incentive to do it. So what looked like a conflict of interest initially at least can be less of a conflict of interest when we sit down and we think about it, especially when we think about it in terms of dentistry. No dentist wants to be known in the community as that guy who just wants your money. You want to be known as a genuine professional who does great work, and that's why people flock to you, not because you're selling them things that they don't need. And this is why when we do answer that question to our clients, not only do we say, hey, we can't handle that dimension of your lease. We might have some good thoughts about it, but that's not our specialty. You need someone who knows it. And the person who knows it best is not just a broker, but a broker who has a long-term incentive to deliver a quality product to you as a dentist. And so when we recommend brokers, we make sure they are someone who has tons of experience and a very strong vested interest in their reputation being left intact in this industry. But it still leaves that question, I'm still paying a higher rate, right? Well, that may not be true. So what happens is a landlord's going to go out there, he's got a piece of property, and he wants to sell some space. And that landlord will go hire a listing agent to go out there and basically market the space and find people to fill it up. And these listing agreements that the landlord enters into with these listing agents, they're going to say a variety of things. And they're going to compensate their brokers differently. But generally speaking, they're going to say, listing agent, I'm going to give you, for instance, 6% of the base rentals if you fill up these spaces. With a listing agent, he has a strong incentive that you not use a broker, because when they sign you up, they're going to keep all 6%. And so you having a concern that your broker might get a cut of that 6% is almost irrelevant, because you're still going to pay that 6% all the while not really having someone in your corner, because that broker has a fiduciary responsibility to his landlord client. So he has an incentive and a legal obligation to get as much rent out of you as possible, and he's going to keep all that 6%. So by using a broker, you at least get someone in your corner, and if you use a broker who is genuinely on your side, you can hopefully use that broker to claw into those rental rates. Now, because there are some crappy brokers out there who do some crappy things, there have grown up some market responses to those bad actors. And the most common ones that we see are like lease negotiators and like rate negotiators, where they create an incentive that aligns with the tenant, at least for some part of the process. And so, for instance, if they're hired to negotiate the rate, so they're going to get paid in a manner that's consistent with rewarding them for saving you money on that rate. And that's fine too. And in fact, laudable. The question is, how many of those dimensions of this lease process are they covering? And so the danger that I've seen is that someone might use a consultant like this who covers some of the dimensions that are involved in getting a lease for a space, but not realizing that that person doesn't cover all of them. So you need to fully understand what that consultant is going to do, how they're economically incentivized, and where the gaps might be, and making sure that you're fully covered in all dimensions of the lease. And I think that where there has grown up to be some controversy and some fighting, I actually don't see that as being very needful. There are definitely some overlap, and I think that's where people get kind of territorial about this stuff. But I see people as having different areas of expertise. And again, bringing it back to dentistry, you can go to a dentist where you can get most of the specialties delivered to you at that office, or you can go to different offices. I mean, there's a lot of different options for the consumer, and as long as you're informed about what they're going to do and about what's going into that service, then that's your business decision. The only thing I would really caution about is that there are occasionally people in the marketplace who offer to do things that they are not qualified to do. And I'll give an example. Let's say your CPA decides that they want to offer some input because your CPA is really close, really in tune with what's going on in your development. Now, your CPA may have incredible insights. In fact, I've seen it. I've seen CPAs give great insight into leases. And the more insight, the better. We've never gotten upset when other people offer insight. The danger would be if you mistook the CPA's review for instance, a lawyer's review, or you mistook him for your broker. For instance, there are companies who will review your lease. I actually think that there are a couple of companies out there who are probably violating the law. And the only question I would have about that is if they're not savvy enough to know that they're violating the law, you have to have questions about what they're going to do for you on your lease. But really, at the end of the day, the most important thing is making sure that they know their role and you know their role, And what's important about those roles is how everyone's economically incentivized to put you into the best position possible. So like I said at the beginning, we don't really want to push the idea of brokers or turn anyone off of brokers. Our interest is in information and making sure people know. We just hear enough people with, I hate to call it bad information, but I think just misinformation or incomplete information. And so that's the idea here today. We just want to make sure that people know that absolutely there are some crappy brokers out there. And I think that's what has fueled some of the information, whether it's bad and maybe it's actually accurate. But just not all brokers are created equal. And it's going to be good for you to seek out people who can represent you in the various dimensions of a lease and represent you expertly. And if you do that, you'll be okay. So this wraps up our initial Barely Legal podcast. We'll see you next time.